Just what do you suppose Jesus was doing there down by the River Jordan? I'm pretty clear about why John is there. I mean, Luke has taken his usual very painstaking effort to set the scene for John, son of Zechariah. We are told that John is proclaiming a baptism for the repentance of sins, that he is the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, "Prepare the way of the Lord." He even gets that very memorable first line. You remember that one? "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come?" So yes, I get why John is there down by the riverside. You also may remember those gospel passages that he proclaimed as we prepared for Christmas. "Whoever has two coats must share with anyone who has none, and whoever has food must do likewise." John was there at the River Jordan to call people to mark a change of mind, a change of heart. But why was Jesus there? What could he have been doing at this revival? Was he checking out the newest radical teacher? Maybe Mary sent him down there to check on his cousin to make sure that John didn't get into any more trouble with the authorities? Now, I realize I'm being somewhat coy here, but this is a real question that has occupied theologians for centuries and was clearly on the minds of those who are writing these gospels as well. Because it comes down to this. If John was enacting a baptism for the forgiveness of sins, and we trust Jesus to be the one who was without sin, then just what was he doing there? Scholar Robert Brerley points our attention to the first part of verse 21. It reads, "Now when all the people had been baptized, and when Jesus also had been baptized," that's all it is. We get no action of the baptism. Note that Luke has little interest in whether or not John actually is there or not. There's no back and forth between the two of them about who is worthy, like in Matthew, or who must increase and who must decrease, like in John. It's very simple. It's just, when all the people was baptized, Jesus was too. In Brerley's words, Jesus simply got in line with everyone who had been broken by the wear and tear of this selfish world and had all but given up on themselves and their God. One more time. Jesus simply got in line with everyone who had been broken by the wear and tear of this selfish world and had all but given up on themselves and their God. With all those people, Jesus simply got in line. And there's something about this that has stayed with me. And maybe it's just because we've emerged from Advent, Star Wars, Miss New Year's Day. It was quite a celebration. Or because we spent a good amount of time with those brilliant angels proclaiming the good news of his birth, and we scattered stars across the space. Or because of those astrologers who brought those amazing gifts. But then, here Jesus is, with voices calling and voices crying, with people born and people dying. Here's this Jesus, not cutting the line or skipping the line, but waiting in line with us. I don't know about you, but that's something that I can lean into. Because like those who came to the River Jordan to hear John's call to a change of heart, my guess is that there are those here today who are in line themselves. Maybe you're in line wondering if your turn is ever going to come. Or maybe you're in line hoping that the broken relationship that you have been enduring might be able to mend. Or maybe you're in line for this season of life to finally turn to the next. Or maybe when this new year began, you got into line to turn yourself. Or maybe there's something in this broken world and you are in line right now, ready to give yourself so that it might finally begin to change. No matter what the wear or tear might be, you are not in that line alone. You see, in Luke's telling of the gospel, there is no doubt about the fragmented and distorted nature of this world. But Jesus, by being born into it, with his baptism with all the people, Jesus makes manifest, makes real, that his dwelling is here among us. Yes, Jesus resists what destroys the creatures of God. Jesus shows the ways that this world has been deformed. Jesus enacts another way of being in it. But Jesus is fundamentally, willfully present in the midst of it all. In the rocky path and the muddy waters. And friends, this is hard. It's so much easier to look away, you know, to avert your gaze. For the pain and the struggle and the heartache of those around us is right there. And the pain and the struggle and the heartache that lies within us is right here. This past week, I was with a busload of third graders. And we were coming back from a field trip to visit John Muir's home in Martinez. And as we exited Highway 80, we took that left-hand turn up onto Gilman. And we slowly drove through the tent and tarp city that is under that overpass. And amidst the chatter of 8 and 9-year-olds, I heard one matter-of-fact, resigned young voice. And there's the homeless people under the freeway. It wasn't derogatory, and it wasn't dismissive. It was simply a description of something that this child has seen for long enough that it's now part of her landscape. And it may be this, it was something like this that drove Jesus' next action. Because particular to this Luke's gospel, Jesus prayed. Do you ever wonder what Jesus was praying? What he was hoping might happen? Or was he looking for guidance? Was he wanting to have a burden released? Was he hoping that the way forward would become clear? This response of prayer is one that we are going to see a lot. It's going to happen over and over and over this year as we make our way through Luke's gospel, because at critical junctures, when the way ahead is difficult to see or when there is great challenge, our gospel tells us that Jesus draws aside to pray. Right? Time and again, he does this all night before he selects the 12. He prays. Right? Before asking these 12 who they know him to be, he prays. Before he ascends the mountain for the transfiguration, he prays. When the disciples want to know how to pray, he prays. When he comes to his arrest, he prays. And at his death, he prays. My sense is that when Jesus needed guidance, when he needed clarity, when he needed stamina, when he needed courage, prayer was his response. Which means that it must be ours as well. I cannot tell you the number of times that I have been saved, often from myself, by the prayer of 3 deep breaths. Or by simply sitting after a difficult conversation. Or the gift that I have received when I have asked someone to pray with me because the words just won't come. Or the presence I feel when scores of people uphold me. Friends, we don't know what will follow the prayers we offer. Only that we actually have the opportunity to be changed by the encounter. And understand that if we are really going to be present, and I mean truly present, in the hurt and the sorrow of this world, with the pain that we have internalized and carried on, and the pain that crushes the lives of those around us much closer to us than we wish to believe, then we need to open ourselves up to the love divine that awaits for us to but say the word. To engage in this really hard work with the trials and the tribulations that will come, to do this without prayer, is to cut ourselves off from perhaps the only balm that has the power to restore us. Because when we're honest, often we do not know the way forward. It's not always clear the path that we are to take. And this is just as true for communities as it is for individuals. And that's why we have been in prayer over and over again at All Souls as we come to these critical points in the life of our parish. Jesus did this time and time again. And so in these past several years, when we have opened ourselves up, we have looked for guidance to discern a vision, to make a strategic plan, and to see it through. And today, after this service, as you might have read in the Pathfinder this past week, we're going to be talking as a parish family about what we've learned about this parish house that we have been given and how best we can serve our mission, because there are many paths ahead. So today and in these days to come, I would ask you to keep All Souls and the vestry and all those who make these decisions, make this a part of your regular life of prayer, that we may know where God is leading us next. Friends, you may use a particular set of words, or you might have a space in your home, or you might have a practice that helps you to hold that space in silence. Or you might be looking for a way to come close. I know that firsthand, because prayer doesn't always come easy. But when the way ahead is unclear, or when you are knocked asunder, when you are grieved by the cruelty and the indifference that surrounds us and that pervades us, I want you to remember this. At the River Jordan, there was a long, long line. There was a long line of people who were just like you and who were just like me. And they were waiting. They were waiting to walk into the cool waters of the Jordan River. They, like us, were feeling the weight of what they were carrying. They, like us, were still smarting from John's righteous exhortations. They, like us, were wondering, how is this going to work out? They, like us, were waiting. But they did not, and we do not wait alone.